Yeah, I knew this was going to be one of those nights that's 10 pounds in a 5-pound sack. But we'll get
Excuse me.
But he's got to be talking about you.
Enough about my anatomy. Okay. So
I was going to ask actually for you to throw out a price.
All right, so here's our next segment here. Pro wrestling Singers? Archetypes for MMA. And I put these up. You guys have had a chance to look at these.
What are we doing here?
I'm going to run through the list here. Pro wrestling archetypes for MMA, and I'm going to explain this here. This is a thing. I'm going to read all of these off. We can react to them afterwards. I know that Jake, particularly, you know, being as huge an MMA regular ring announcer, we got to definitely promote the stuff here that you got going on. But Jake is kind of our go-to guy for MMA in the FDH Lounge. And I know Jake, and we've talked about it previously on the show. You are fascinated by this nexus between MMA and pro wrestling because you were a pro wrestling fan first. I think that, you know, unless you never liked pro wrestling, everybody that's into MMA was into pro wrestling first because it existed first.
Yep.
So, by definition.
They do pro wrestling better than pro wrestling does.
Oh, they're so much better at pro wrestling than pro wrestling.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm trying to think of stuff, knowing that you're going to be back on here. What can we do that would be a good segment? And it just kind of hit me. The classic archetypes of pro wrestling, how many of these, A, could be used for MMA, and B, have been used, and from talking to you off air, C, have been used. So I'm going to run through this list here. When I get done with the list, I mean, another thing we can do here, too, if you guys think there's a better example of any of these guys, let me know. But here's the 20 that I came up with here on the list.
Responding now or
the classic
waiting?
Ones. I'll pretty much go through the list here. You know, make some mental notes on this because I want to leave us enough time after I get through the list for us to break it down here. So,
my memory's not that good.
Well, this will be a real challenge then. All right, here's your 20 pro wrestling classic archetypes here. How many of them could be used or would be used for MMA? Your anti-hero. The example that I came up with, Steve Austin, probably the best one there. The coolest man on the planet character, got to be The Rock. White bread babyface, Bob Backlund. Underdog babyface, Mikey Whipwreck. Unless you watched old school ECW, you're not going to get that reference, but trust me, he did it better than anybody. The hero for the kiddies, John Cena. The good of the company or good of the sport face, Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer just kind of epitomized that. You know, company man, I'm here for our fan base. Beloved elder statesman, Terry Funk. The cool heel, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. The infantile face, doing kind of, you know, an immature, fun-loving kind of a gimmick. Shawn Michaels, Triple H, as DX.
No one does it better than Rick Morris. Absolutely no one does it better than Rick Morris.
I've been told that.
Don't interrupt him.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I like to think that I'm actually the next one here. The pretty boy face, Kerry Von Erich. The narcissistic heel, notwithstanding the fact there was another guy named the narcissist.
Don't tie your shoes.
The narcissistic heel, Rick Rude. Anti-American villain, Nikolai Volkoff. Went with him. Classic old school Nikolai Volkoff. The effeminate heel. I don't think this would work in MMA at all.
I think it would work great, but there isn't one.
Okay. Well, Adrian Street, I thought, was the best version of that. The weird, scary, foreign dude, Abdullah the Butcher. Now, it's different than foreign savage, Kamala. The lone wolf badass, Samoa Joe. The supernatural dabbler type, The Undertaker. Blue-collar hero, Dusty Rhodes. The saloon brawler, Bruiser Brody. And the troubled tweener, Mankind. So there's our list of 20. First of all, are there any on here that you would dispute or think anybody else is better than any of those 20?
No, they were pretty good, actually.
Okay. I mean, most of the times I knew who you were going with. I mean, the only thing is, you know, Rick Rude is the archetype, I think, for what you were talking about, even though, you know, the narcissist, I think, would be by definition, when you say the narcissist, it's like, okay, it's going to be Lex Luger, and then you're like, Rick Rude. It's like, well, yeah, obviously.
No, that was the abysmally failed face push.
Yeah. So there's your list of 20. So we were talking about this off air a little bit earlier tonight, Jake, and you indicated some of these have been used. So in terms of, but nobody's ever been pushed that way,
and nobody
by
ever
the
will. You can't do that. So? No, you can't do that at MMA because MMA fans will crap on it. You can't push someone specifically in Japan. You can. Japan guys have pushed with interesting gimmicks. For example, Alberto Del Rio, before he was Alberto Del Rio, was Dos Cara, and he fought MMA in Japan with his Lucha Libre mask on.
Okay.
And they would never allow that. The UFC, they would he'd be I guess, you know, that would work as a heel type. I mean, you saw how hated Brock Lesnar was just because he was a pro wrestler when he showed up. He might be your tweener, by the way, Brock, because you got half the audience out there who likes him because he was a pro wrestler, and your MMA purists who hate him because he was a pro wrestler. It's interesting how that dynamic works. But on the topic of some of them, like, what was the first one? It was the
anti-hero.
I would go with Nick Diaz on that one.
Okay.
As I had mentioned to you earlier, Nick Diaz was the bad boy in the UFC.
Okay.
Got tossed out of the company, went to Strikeforce, and I was arguably, in many people's eyes, the number two welterweight in the world.
Yeah, but you know who always has come across to me as the Steve Austin of MMA?
Chuck Liddell.
Yeah, it's probably because of the look whatnot. But there were a lot of ones that Liddell could fit in there.
Liddell would be the Terry Funk role now.
No, I actually that's Randy Couture.
Couture.
Yeah, that's Randy Couture.
Because he's so beloved.
Okay.
Couture could do. I mean, he could come out, take a dump in the octagon, and they still.
I was actually thinking Chuck Liddell more of the blue collar or the beer swilling one. Actually, Tank Abbott's the beer swilling.
Yeah, Saloon Brawler. There's your Bruiser Brody.
The blue collar one to me.
I was thinking him more of like the all American face, like
there's a lot of shades.
Like the coolest guy on the planet. I gave that one to Rampage because Rampage just seems like the guy you want to hang out with.
You know which one? Absolutely. Just I can pigeonhole somebody was the company man, the Tommy Dreamer archetype. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, this is a fact. It's Rich Franklin. Rich Franklin is like he is the biggest UFC company man ever because he had such a big role. You know, when the UFC exploded, they had such well-established champions with Liddell, Franklin, and Hughes. And Rich, you know, really hasn't done much since then of note. I mean, he got knocked out by Anderson Silva, but he's always been, you know, he's got a guy with the reputation of good fights, and he always, you know, he'll take on any comers, you know, and it seems like he'll step in on a short notice for Dana White.
And not only that, he's a great representative of the sport and of the UFC because he used to be a school teacher.
Yes.
He's an intelligent guy. I mean, he was on our show.
Yes.
The man knows what he's doing.
He's a very good close personal friend of mine.
Yes. Do
you know what archetype does not work in MMA? I want to hear it because
Supernatural Undertaker.
Yeah, that doesn't fit.
No, because they've tried. They actually have somewhat tried it, and not just the UFC, but in Strikeforce, and it never works. Wow. And I don't know if it's the audience or because there may be a smarter audience, whatever. Is the standard anti-American heel? It seems whenever they bring a highly regarded foreigner in, you know, whether it be a Fedor or, you know, anyone over from Japan, that guy gets cheered a lot. He gets the babyface superstar reaction. I don't think the anti-American, I mean, Grant.
You know what's funny about that? That's hilarious because what it reminds me of, and for as much as the MMA purists want to crap on pro wrestling, that reminds me of East Coast indie fan. This is awesome.
In many regards, that's true.
In many regards, it is like that because the East Coast indie fan is the same thing as the MMA fan in being that they respect a good fighter. They want to see a good fight.
Uh-huh.
Look, if you suck, they'll crap on you no matter where you're from.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they don't really care
that was
about
a great follow-up by you, Ricky.
One of my favorite ill-fated heel turns in MMA, by the way, was the GSP heel turn on Matt Hughes where he's like, I was not impressed with your performance.
Yeah,
it was like, no one like bought it. They're like, you're such a nice guy. No one's going to buy you as a heel. It didn't work.
MMA mic work.
Yeah, it was awful. It was like, I was not impressed. Like, and you can tell efforts. He's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, that's like when they had Bret Hart. That's like when they had Bret Hart come out saying WWE Universe. It's like, come on, all right, you were made to say that. We'll give you a mulligan.
One of the things on there, however, that does fit a perfect role as a heel, as the narcissistic heel, Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
And I say this because after Anderson Silva's fought against Damian Maia, I do believe, where he danced around for four rounds and did nothing, the crowd was booing him so badly. Everybody hated on Anderson Silva. They're like, I don't want to buy another pay-per-view with him on it. Dana White was like, you know, screw him. He's a champion. We may even consider cutting him from the UFC. It was that extreme. Chael Sonnen gets named as the number one contender for the title. Going into it, everybody's like, you know, hey, I want to see Chael. You know, the majority of the fans were behind Chael because they remember how basically they got ripped off with what Anderson Silva's performance was in the main event. By the time that fight rolled around, strictly off Chael Sonnen's mic work, because I don't believe he was that well known by the, I'll call them the MMA mark, the newbie, as I believe we used to call them back in the day. I don't think they were that familiar with the old school Chael Sonnen, But his mic work, he had talked himself up as such a heel, like to the point where he's like hating on everybody, everything, and to the point now where the same people who wanted to see Anderson Silva lose so bad were pulling for Anderson Silva to beat the crap out of this guy and shut him up. He effectively turned Anderson Silva back to a face again, and all of a sudden after that fight, when Silva pulled out that win completely out of nowhere, Sonnen tests positive for steroids, I do believe, ends up in a money laundering situation, and he's still running his mouth. Like, you know what?
Well, that's okay.
Screw you guys. He's like, I'm going to keep doing what I do. And you know what? That has made me a fan of Chael Sonnen. I was actually pulling for him to win. I was the only one. We were at the old Barley House out in Akron yelling out, cheering for the Republican, as I like to call Chael Sonnen. Like, that should be his gimmick. He should be the Republican Chael Sonnen, because that's who he is, and he fits the gimmick to a T on that one. So as far as the narcissistic heel, he gets my nod.
You know, when I think of heels in the MMA, I think of one guy. That was a great example, but I think of Tito Ortiz.
Yeah,
he's a great heel.
I don't know if he's the Hall Nash prototype is cool, because I don't know, because he tries to be cool, I think, and people kind of like,
in his era he was cool, but not anymore.
He's kind of not anymore. Well, kind of like Kevin Nash. You know, I mean, let's be honest.
True.
Okay?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, no one's. I mean, although Coach Kevin Nash and the Alex Shelley promo were
was
outstanding.
Some of Kevin Nash's finest work.
Yeah,
that was really good.
But, you know, Tito, to his credit, you know, a lot of people are like, I don't want to see Tito Ortiz. Who's he beat? He always draws. I mean, you know, the show in Seattle. The TV rating, certainly, I can't remember what it was, but it would have been a lot better when Tito was there.
But I also got to give props to my boy Phil Davis, who
I saw
come up through former veteran with us back in the day. I don't know if you're still around for those shows when Phil Davis was on.
I can't remember.
Yeah,
I can't. But don't take it personally. I just can't remember 2006.
That's okay. I was around that time. Me neither.
By the way, as far as it goes with Kevin Nash, the real tragedy of Kevin Nash is a lot of his most entertaining work comes when he's in the process of getting ready to bury somebody more deserving than him. Have you ever noticed that? It's a weird kind of
Actually, my favorite thing Kevin Nash has ever done is the promo, and especially after watching the shoot interviews, is the promo him and Nahal did, absolutely annihilatingly blastered at one of the WCW Nitros from Panama City Beach. They come out of the NWO in like 96 or 97. They come out in like Hawaiian shirts and they're just hammered drunk.
Yeah.
And they tell the story about being backstage, coming with like a six. They stopped off, got six pack of beers on the way there, ended up carrying two cases in, and Bischoff's making a beeline to arrest or like tell basically no more partying, and they end up in Hogan's trailer, and like they come out and Kevin Nash's first line of the promo is, hey guys, show all of the fat chicks too, they need some loving out there. I was like, Kevin, I forgot how great
I remember
that was.
I remember that the Sandman thought they were very irresponsible, but as far as it goes with the white bread baby face,
I don't really see that in
this.
I
wonder. Well, see, here's the thing though. Bob Backlund, all right, and there was no MMA in the 70s, all right, at least as we understand it now, but if there had been collegiate wrestling champion, similar to Brock Lesnar. Bob Backlund is a guy who you could imagine in a different era going into MMA. He's the epitome of the cornbread, white bread baby face. Is that sellable on any level? I don't think so in the year 2011 in any pro wrestling, MMA, whatever. But, I mean, is there, could there be?
In MMA, it is. I mean, the thing with MMA, because a lot of your wrestlers are like that.
Just because you're purist, like wrestling purist guy.
Like Matt Hughes. We talk about Matt Hughes.
Matt Hughes, Hughes would
kind of fit that bill.
Kinda, yeah.
Okay. They don't. I don't think the MMA crowd, what Jake's saying, craps on that concept like the wrestling concept.
They
that wrestling,
that's just part of the nature. I guess it's, you're either, you know, a thug that's been arrested seven times or you're not. One of the things that's with it. A couple of the characters that are archetypes that weren't on the list that did pop into my head. One of them was the journeyman who has been around way too long and should hang it up, he most recently did, was, I think in pro wrestling, I would have given that word to Jake the Snake Roberts or a Greg the Hammer Valentine. In MMA, I'm giving it to Ken Shamrock.
If you wanted a journeyman, that would be Dennis Stamp. I'm not even booked.
Yes, Dennis Stamp. But
stop that.
In MMA, I would give that to Ken Shamrock, who supposedly retired after the third time Tito Ortiz beat the crap out of him, and I believe he is still taking poundings in like South Africa or something like that.
You realize that no one, by the way, just laughed at that joke outside of Amarillo, Texas, Ricky. Okay,
I understand. All right, yes, I understand. As long as I can make the folks in the room laugh, that's all I care about.
My good friend Chad Repack will be very proud of me. What I'm about to say here.
What?
You know, Chad Repack, who fits the white bread baby face thing,
Who?
Is John Jones. Actually, he just seems like a real. Remember what he? You know.
Yeah.
even though he's obviously African American,
he would be a black
and
you
know,
still.
You know, I mean, and I say Chad Repak would be proud because he hates how like white players can only be compared to white players and black. And so, you know, he's not the only person who's made fun of that. But you know, here's a guy who just, you know, saved like an old lady in the park right before he wins the light heavyweight title.
Yeah.
Like that's, I mean, is there anything more white bread upstanding than that?
He's a superhero,
right? And when he was told, you know, you're going to get the title shot after the fight before he beat Shogun, he was like, oh my, like he felt like he was like so overwhelmed. It's like, come on, like you didn't know you were getting a title shot, like you know.
Well, speaking of another one on there too, the Savage Foreigner. I didn't think this would really fit, but I'd go Thiago Silva because he took a recent pee test and he's not human. We've still yet to determine what he is, but he's not human.
Those are ones that I don't think work in MMA.
It was a joke.
Yeah.
Get
back to me when he starts painting a crescent moon on his belly. But two closing thoughts for me.
That would be incredible.
That would be awesome. We're at the top of the hour. Two closing thoughts. One would be on the subject of the ones that wouldn't work here. And we joked about this before, the effeminate heel. But if you were to get like a guy coming
out there doing the
giving a kiss to his opponent after he beats him,
only thing that came close was the guy who tried to kiss Heath Herring in Pride, blew a kiss at him before the fight started, and Heath Herring knocked him out cold. This isn't like the stare on he kissed him, and Heath Herring just knocked him out before the bell.
That would absolutely be money.
Yeah, you could. I mean, and it would draw. But the thing is,
it'd get old, and they'd be like, if there's a thing with that, you're drawing so much more pressure on yourself because you can't book it, so you're drawing five times more pressure on the thing with that gimmick is you have to win,
right?
And then people will just like you.
Then they'll start liking you.
It's very hard.
It'll be like Johnny B. Bad slowly turning into Wild Man Mark Marrow and ending with a hot chick thing.
Yeah, that was a very strange transition, was it not?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. But you know what though? Just like in MMA, where the thing was, I think it was based on the fact that he actually got kind of good. You know, people forget. You know, when he first started, Johnny B. Bad was terrible. But you know, when by the time he went to WWE, he was a pretty good worker. I mean, he was doomed by injuries and by the fact that he had a lovely wife. But
very nice. Well, the final point that I had, it's not even an MMA point. We'll wrap it on this note while we're awaiting here. Bret Hart should be giving us a call momentarily here. What you mentioned about white athletes can only be compared to white, black athletes to black. That's why I always joked about Byron Leftwich. If he didn't win an NAACP Image Award, should have. Slow, big, black quarterback. Talk about a guy that broke down racial barriers and led to greater understanding.
I heard a great thing on that topic was with our buddy Andre Knott was talking about. They're comparing the Browns running back.
Another good close personal friend of mine,
Andre
Knott.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Peyton Hillis. When he was in his run last year, and everyone's talking like Mike Allston. Andre Knott, who everybody knows is a black guy, made me very happy when he goes, why does everybody compare him to white running backs?
Right.
Why can't he be compared to black running backs? I'm like, thank you. I'm glad that word stereotype. It's interesting you brought that up. It's like we have to like compare, I guess.
In terms of physicality, he's not as physical. Nobody was, but I always said Earl Campbell. And that's where I always said to my fellow Browns fans who were so hyped about him, I always said, this guy's going to need a walker by December with his style. You know, this guy's not built for the long haul. So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's more physical, I think, than Allstott was. But you're right. People want to go for that easy comparison.